Okay, basically, Pickle, what is it? It's a scripting language. It grew out of... Where's next? I hate PowerPoint.
It's Facebook.
There it is. Okay, basically, it was originally developed as a reusable command line and program driving language for CAD systems in the 90s. Basically, it came out of Berkeley, the same place where I think like Spice appeared from. And some of the same people were working on these things for developing CAD. Problem is that everybody was developing... Am I in the way? Won't be the first time. Everybody was developing bad command languages that were limited and flaky and different for all the tools. Basically, John Osterhout, the guy who I just mangled his name, wrote it originally as a means of doing one command and configuration language that he could just put into all of his research projects and other groups' research projects so that he wouldn't have to, he could design it once and it wouldn't be nearly as bad as all of the different things he had to keep track of on what he had already. One of the key issues here was designed to be linked into programs easily so that you don't have the problem you have with a lot of scripting languages where it's not sure whether or not you're linking it into the program or is the program being linked into it. Guile's famous for that. It's like, yes, here's a scripting language. I want to own everything. This stays off and does what you tell it to do, and it doesn't. You don't have to redo your whole program to add this in. And it was born on 1988, which unfortunately is 3 years after I graduated from high school. Now on to the good. Most of the good is, it is, there's good editor support. Vim, Emacs, both work, and I don't care about the rest of them. There are other Tickleware editors. In fact, there are certain programming editors that are written in Tickle. The commands are very regular. You have a noun, a verb, and some optional stuff. And everything is a command. For loop's a command, if is a command, and it's consistent. Once you learn how things go together, they go together the same way pretty much everywhere. And, it's not like Perl, for example, where... Who here's gotten hit by Perl's magic?
Who hasn't?
Yeah, well, I don't know. There could be an accountant in the room, but...
I think Fireball said it is magic.
Nah. Perl's magic is a wonderful thing. It's like how to have 8 other different types of contexts you have to keep track of just to get something to print. Basically, the error messages are actually helpful. One of the neat tricks that someone did with TCL's error messages was they didn't want to write basically syntax highlighting for Perl. For Tickle. So what they did was they basically opened a shell and piped commands into Tickle. And Tickle would give back error messages, it would parse it and pipe it out, and would build up what was valid syntax from that. So actually this guy basically offloaded one of the harder parts to get right of a programming editor, is actually being able to handle the language correctly, completely off onto the language and said, here, you tell me what's good. So if you change versions and something changed, it would still just magically work. Let's see, where was it? Yes, helpful error magic is frowned upon. It's great for a part-time programmer like me, a guy who can go for long stretches between touching stuff. And I still need to get something to work. Because it's stable, it doesn't change, it's consistent. It's boring. I like that. After all, between me and the programming language, I hope to God the programming language is boring. I'm the speaker, after all. And again, going with boring, it's stable over time. I've compiled C extensions with some minor edits. I mean minor, like Sage level 2, 3 sysadmin, can kind of comment a line out and see. edits, and I've got stuff, major stuff, to compile like 10 years after the last time the author touched it, going through a couple of different versions of the language. So things just kind of work. The wiki is a great resource. It does have the problem with any open source project that's been around for a documentation project that's kind of been around for a long period of time, in that it's really easy to get people to put stuff in. It's really hard to get someone to volunteer to take stuff out. But with that said, it's still a useful tool, and it does have a lot of information in it. And there are basically 12 rules to understand the syntax of what's going on for Tickle. And it's a man page. If you do the man, TCL with a capital T, and you have Tickle installed, you will get the 12 rules. It will explain them to you. And you just apply them, and it works. It's consistent. Let's see. Hit return. Okay, basically, everything's a command. There's evaluation, and it's lazy. Tickle runs around commands and word structures. You don't have, like, this is this, this is a special form, this is a preprocessor directive, really. It's very simple. Double quotes are interpreted in a specific way where it basically does variable substitution on it. Arguments will get expanded. Braces are scope delimiters that they delimit, and they can also be used for strings when you don't want things to expand. Command substitution, variable substitution, same thing.
Mark, can you use the mic? Just turn it on.
Is it on?
Just turn it on.
Switch
it.
Bubaloo. Do I have to talk into this thing?
Yeah, I was lying
now. I'll be louder. It's no problem. And basically, backlash substitution, comments, which are basically a type of command. It's a command that starts with a pound sign. One of the things that you have to be careful of with this, with comments, is you can't actually have braces in comments because it will match, even in a comment. So it's one of the gotchas. And basically, order substitute and substitution on word boundaries. One of the things that does get, or at least got me when I started doing Tickle, was that if you do, like, you know how it is on C, you can do, people have different things for if, else. And some people like to have things touching, other people don't. The mic now. But, you know, and it still works. If you put the curly braces next to the else on Tickle, it will turn it into a word that begins with a closed curly brace, ends with an open curly brace, and has else in the middle. So you will not you'll get a syntax error. And on to the next slide. Basically, next slide is Hello World. Because what would be a talk about a language without, well, Hello World? It's all in one line long. There it is. Basically, you put a string, Hello World.
Can you get to the mic, please?
Hello.
Okay. Look, I'm not a lounge singer. Give me a break. What you do is you would just basically type text. It's an interactive language. That's Hello World. You just put a string, you put string, Hello World. The line terminator by default is the new line. You can put semicolons, but they're optional. The idea here is that most statements terminate at an end of line. You hit enter, you're done. You can continue a line, you can continue a line with a slash at the end, but basically the idea is that 9 times out of 10, you're just going to end the line with enter. So why put a character there? And also, puts will by default put in a new line at the end of the string. You can suppress it with a command line option, but the default is generally you want to print something, you want a new line. Now, basically, when you're in interactive mode, it behaves a lot like the Unix shell. By interactive mode, I mean you started up TCL. And you're running it in a command, you want to see what this does. So you're just typing stuff, and it's going on. What you get there is if you have, for example, if you type PWD, which is not a valid TCL command, it will hand it off to the shell. So basically, this command was run by my running Z shell underneath. It'll give you the result back, and then you can go on. So you can mix interactively. You could like run a man page or anything else in your window. Now, error messages are, well, it's generally once you kind of know what you're doing, quicker to invoke an error message in another terminal than it is to look it up. And it's kind of like, in a way, it's like Cisco IOS, where you're not quite sure what you're doing, but you know how to get there halfway, and then you put a question mark, and something comes up and prompts you. It's the same basic idea. You can actually just, the system will help you remember what it is. Instead of getting the book out or finding the man page, it'll just tell you what it should look like. So if you're not sure the exact syntax, you'll find out quickly. Errors is Doc's demo. Okay, basically we're going to go through the process of changing one stupid string to the same stupid string with different capitalization. We're going to demonstrate the noun, verb, stuff, and using the string command as an example. So, let me see how to do this. How do you stop this thing?
Escape.
Well, I don't want to kill it, I just want to stop it.
F5?
F5? No, that ain't it. Function, F5. What the hell is it? I know where I am, escape, that's good. Now it gets... Start this whole thing because I hate PowerPoint. Okay. Now let's get over here.
Where is my... Okay.
So I need to see what I'm doing. Cool, refreshing drink.
Speaking of the mic all the time.
Yeah, I know, but I need a third hand. You volunteer?
Sure.
Oh, dear God. Okay. This might work out. As you can see, we have basically, when I give it the string command, I get an unknown or ambiguous subcommand, and I get a list of things I can choose. Basically, these are my choices. Since I want to make something look like a toTitle, I will pick toTitle, which is on the last complete line towards the front. I feel like it should be heavy breathing or something.
Wait, Mark, let me just ask. You type string, and TCL knows what string is?
String is one of the nouns.
Okay.
It's a command that TCL knows about.
What does it mean?
It's that you're going to do with some object. You're going to do some action on a string.
Got it.
Okay. String. As you can see, basically, string, when I do string to title, it tells me string to title, the string, and the optional first and last character of what you want to make a title out of.
Yeah. okay, basically I have somewhat different capitalization, but you can see that that's a string, and I get the result. The idea is that you can do this with any command that's there. You will get all of the help you need, really, short of, I don't know what I'm doing, I actually have to read something. And let's get PowerPoint going, because I hate my life. Any time now. Okay. That's 11. String example, basically same thing. Now more good stuff. Basically, old TCL code works. T is called the TCL extension architecture. What you do is you write, if you're writing C or C code or a shared library, you write to the T architecture, and that puts basically compiled stubs in place that call your library so that you never actually have to deal with the specifics of whatever version of TCL happens to be today's. Sorry. And basically, again, I've had 10-year-old untouched code compile and link into a new version of TCL with very minor tweaks, which is basically commenting out TK and just some other stuff. It was just not stuff that had to do with getting it to load into tickle. The community has been there for 2 decades. They've had annual conferences for 18 years running. And there's also a European conference every year that's about 10 years old. Okay, now one of my things that I really like about this, and actually also comes in handy in tickle because it is such a dynamic language that you can't do like static analysis on it because you don't really know what the language may, what your code may be until you run it, is it has a very nice integrated unit testing framework. It ships with the tarball. Anytime you can get any version of tickle, and you can get the basically the acceptance tests for it. So if you're saying this should run on whatever and it should behave this way, they do a very good job of basically documenting the code through tests. And it's also a really nice unit testing framework if you have to do unit testing frameworks or if you have to do any unit testing yourself, especially on a system. Cisco uses TCL for QA test management. A lot of people do. It's big in CAD. And let's go on to the next slide. Now, the extensions. There's TCL lib, which is sort of a kitchen sink of extensions. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's TKCon, which is basically an enhanced console. There is SNIT, which is a, basically it stands for SNIT is not incremental TCL, which is a different object system. Yeah, it's not only the GNU people who do it, but basically it's an object system that's written in pure TCL. How many other scripting languages write their object system, or at least one of them? There's about there's like four of them that I know of. People put their own object systems together with the language because it's easy. This one's basically in TCLib. It stood the test of time. People use it. There's expect. If anyone's a sysadmin on Unix and has been around for more than 5 years, you've probably used expect at least once. And one of the nice things about expect, the book, which was published, I think, in 1994, is still the definitive and accurate document for the current version of expect.
Dot
lines,
right?
Yep. The book is accurate. It's still, if you read it and do what it says, you will get the right result. Medikit is, we'll come back to it. It comes back more with the StartKit setup, which will be coming up later. But it's an embeddable NoSQL database. And I've used it. It can be very handy, and it's small. You have SQLite. PCL is used heavily in SQLite. It's one of the native bindings to it. It's one of the first native bindings after C. A lot of the unit testing is done in PCL. There's Postgres, there's MySQL, there's TNM Scotty. Anybody here remember Scotty? I loved Scotty and TNM, which was basically the event, it was SNMP polling with an event loop. And I used to work at an ISP where I'd be polling thousands of things, or actually hundreds of thousands of things. So I liked not waiting for the ones that didn't come back. And it worked very well. Decent MIB parser. It was a good package. It's better than a lot of what's out there today. TLS is an SSL, and BLT adds basically array and vector processing and graphics around doing things like strip charts from large sums of data. Now, Cisco gets its own... Okay, Cisco's Cisco, so they get their own slide. Cisco's bought into TCL in a big way. It's in every bit of iOS you have out there. It's been in since 2006. So if you can write Tickle, you can make your router do really interesting things. It's also, I think, in some of their call center and other products, where and CNR. I know it's in Cisco CNR. And they also have, there's a book that they have that will tell you how to do interesting things to your router. And it's just something not a lot of people know of, that they have their own little Tickle interpreter in their Cisco routers. Now, StarKits. I've been going pretty fast. I'm going to spend a good deal of time on StarKits, but there's some terminology to go through, and there's a thing called a TCL kit. It's a special TCL runtime that's machine code compiled, has a few other things compiled into it that will enable it to do things like parse a virtual file system and basically read and open a thing called a StarKit, which is a virtual file system that has all of your code in it. So you can make it, instead of having your normal scripting stuff, we've got this large blob of stuff spread out all over the file system, you have one file. So if you're looking at it from a management point of view, it's, from my point of view, it's easier to manage one file that does one thing than manage, you know, everything else and calling out to the system libraries. And now, one of the interesting things about StarKits is if you do them right, at least on Unix, I'm not sure about Windows, but you can put compiled code into the StarKit. You can put your own OpenSSL libraries in and have it not affect anything other than that one bit of code. So you don't have to worry about linking, you don't have to worry about anything, and this isn't running a custom StarKit where you statically compile it in. This is just making basically a load library call, and it'll pull it out of the virtual file system and load it into the process space. So if you have, for some reason, you have something that you need this for and it steps on your everything else in your system, you can do it with Tickle. It's almost like a static library, making a know, you can just do it. You can put binaries in there. You can take third-party binaries that you don't have, and you can stick it in there and not have to worry about it messing with the rest of your system.
What's the use case for
I could give you an anti... Well, usually for me it's more of an anti-use case. It would be things like... if anybody's familiar with how Ruby gets deployed, if you have 10 Ruby apps or Rails apps made over a period of time, basically you have 10 instances of Ruby with their own stuff in their own trees and everything. The idea is, if you have that problem here, you have 10 files to manage. Yeah, and from my point of view, not so much as a developer, but as a system administrator, who wants to get his stuff done and stay out of the way of the developers because, well, they whine and bitch and, it's all your fault, even if you approve otherwise. But this guy could say, all my stuff is right here. It's in these 5 files. It didn't touch anything. It makes it easier to deploy it. It makes it easier to pull stuff in. It makes it easier to do security because I only got to watch 5 MD5 checksums. I only have to watch 5 versions. I don't have the problem of interdependency between things pinning me at one thing and the other thing wanting to do something else. Yes?
So would one of the cases for this be like you have some set of libraries that you don't want to install in the system, but
yes,
you sort of have them accessible to some program?
Repeat the question.
Would one of the use cases be the fact that I don't want... I have a set of libraries, for example, for the sake of argument, that I don't want on the system because I have to use them to do something, but there's security holes in them. I have no choice from a business point of view but to put them on the system, but I want to make sure that no one else can use it. This would be an excellent way of doing that because they're not actually in the file system. They're basically in a zip, basically, sitting there minding their own business. You can't link them. You can't find them. You actually really have to go out of your way and know what you're doing to get access to them. So any of your developers who do, you have a legitimate case to make their life a living hell. Yes?
Do you know if these have been used for things like building software installers?
TCL has been. I know a couple, I forget the names because I don't really pay attention to Windows, but I know a couple of Windows installers have been done with TCL.
With the start kit?
No, not necessarily. There have been other technologies that kind of do the same thing. Yes.
Can you do graphics in Tickle?
In Tickle, no. In TK, yes.
Okay, that's really good. Thanks.
I will not be talking about Tickle because, as you've seen from the way I dress, graphics is not my thing. What?
Wait.
No.
From the way you dress?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not? Right. My talk, I can make all the bad jokes I want.
Okay.
Next slide, please. Let's see. StarKits. Now, oh yes, one of the other nice things about StarKits is for a StarKit, you can make a fat binary. By a fat binary, I don't mean I can detect which hardware architecture macOS is running on. I mean I can make one file that ships for Windows, Mac, Linux, or FreeBSD. The reason for this is part of the dynamicism. I'm not saying you may want to do it as a good idea, but it's there. The reason for it is that you have a very high degree of dynamicism in the language, and there's a variable called AutoPath, which you can modify programmatically, and you can query the running system before it loads anything to say, hi, this is the OS I'm on, this is a hardware architecture I'm on, these are the bits of information I care about, and then you can dynamically add the proper string in a programmatic fashion to your load path. So if you have none of them loaded, it won't find any of them because they're off to the side. You ask which one you're on. You ask your TCL kit, what my platform is, what my OS is, etc. And then you build a string that you add to the list of places to search for dynamically loaded code, and the system will work. And if you come up that you're running on something you don't support, it will just quietly go off into nothing and die. So that's one of the things. It's more of a thing for if you're, say, trying to, say you have a heterogeneous Windows, not even Windows, but say Linux and one of the BSDs. you have some, and you have to run this on both. It allows you to basically manage one executable. You just test it on both platforms, and you copy the same file over, and it'll work. Again, it just, from my point of view, I think it would make things simpler. When you're actually deploying it, it doesn't make a difference what OS I'm deploying on. I just copied this file over there, and it works. Okay. Basically, now we get to some of the more fun stuff. We're going to do it. This is a start kit. It's the simplest way in the world to make one of these things. Basically, you make a dummy file. I am fond of naming things Bobo. So, Bobo TCL. And you have it print Hello World. The reason for this is that when you do your process, you do the start kit, quick wrap, Bobo TCL, and you have a start kit. You do TCL kit run to make sure that it can print Hello World. So basically everything's in the right place. And then you unwrap it, and it'll take that virtual file system that's wrapped up in the kit and expand it out. Then you have a properly laid out virtual file system, which you did not have to spend a long time figuring out how to do. And then you can go in and hack and make your app, because everything is in the right place and things work relatively, but there are some tricks. And then, apparently I have something going off the bottom. You run the start kit, and I'll show you how to do it. Yes?
Do start kits support directory structures? Do start kits support directory structures or just files?
StartKits, one, you have a much better voice for this than I do, but StartKits support directory structures. It makes a directory structure into a file, sort of like what Zip does, but it can read it and then go into it and treat the Zip file, I think it is actually a Zip file, as a file system. There's a virtual file system layer on top of it. Now, let's do the demo. Is a very nice unit test library in Pickle, and you can use it for unit testing. You could use it also for system conformance testing, but you have things now like Puppet, Chef, CF Engine, and if that basically your system conformance testing for configuration and stuff, for the most part, should be there if you're going to do it, so that you can not only find out where it doesn't conform but fix it. But you can do this for any kind, the unit testing, whatever you want to make unit tests for, you can do it. And it's a nice unit testing library. I've used it to test DNS. One time I had to upgrade to DNS server, and we had bugs in DNS, but they wanted to make sure that all the bugs were the same afterwards, because people depended on them. So I basically had to write unit tests for every query we could do against a DNS server. And run it before and then after the upgrade and compare the results. And it did a good job of it. You know, it gives you the documentation that I made this, I did this, and nothing that we care about changed. So, and it also gives you a test suite going forward that once you write these things once, they tend to accumulate, and you could say, well, is the web server behaving correctly? Well, we want to see these 20 things happen this way. And you can basically call HTTP, HTTPS, you could send it login parameters. But you have a general unit test. You can also check file permissions or anything you can write code to do, you can write a unit test for. So, and it's much less painful than Perl's TAP protocol, because you actually write most of the code all in one place, and you don't actually have to do what they do with TAP, where you have like the Perl, and then you have all these little shell scripts and everything else floating around in your test suite that return okay or not.
So it's much more of the code will state in your application, and there are, in the test suite, there are aggregating functions, and it's a nice textual output that's easily parsed and grepable, and you can massage the output into graphs and what have you. So, and you have Tickle, so the graphs, you could do graphs, you could print them, you could generate web pages, you could put it in a database. You have all of these things available. It's, you know, it's one of those things, if you want to spend the money, you can get the result. You get this on. There we went. Here we go. Good. Made the big time at last. Big screen computer. Okay. I'm going to go through my basic and go through the process of building something, but first I'm going to demo the result. I'm going to show you actually one that works already, and then I'm going to go through the process of building. It's really more of a proof of concept. It uses a little bit from TCL-lib, and it's just a matter of showing it works. Okay, in the directory I have a TCL kit, which is the actual C compiled interpreter, and I have something called bobo.kit, which is the compiled start kit with all the code in it. As you can see, there's a fair amount of stuff in bobo.kit. Most of it is TCL lib, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm using one small bit from it, and to make it run, you just do this. Now, as you can see, basically up here at the beginning, let me just do this a little bit because I can see. Okay. At the top, you can see this, the auto path. Prints every, forgot to copy that. Okay, one second, I forgot to copy it over. White space is a good thing. Basically, up top, AutoPath is the search path where TCL will look for shared libraries, TCL code, and there's a convention for file naming and other things that will load these things automatically when you do a package request. It's pretty simple. It works, and there's one interesting bit here because TCL separates
the file loading as a package request. Now, the scoping of things is called a namespace. Now, in one pack, in one file that is loaded via package request, you could have several namespaces, which would be basically the equivalent of scopes. So you could have, you know, A, B, and C, each with their own stuff in it, loaded by one file. Generally, they don't do it, but you can. But as you can see, what the TCL kit did is it appended, basically, here's where I am in the file system, use this Mass 715 projects demo 2. The TCL kit, and you can see all these things are in bobo.kit. None of them go out to the system. And the only other ones are at the beginning is where you have the TCL kit library structure that's in the compile code. And basically it goes through and it tries to load things from all of these directories. What I'm using is basically the IP manipulation library, which is part of TCLib. They just added it in the latest release. It's handy, Eric. Basically, there's, if you want the docs, there's a documentation. First one is reduce to aggregate. What it will do is if you give it a list of networks, it will return the smallest network, set of networks that control everything. I hate this. You made it.
Screensaver.
Oh, I don't need that. Who's got the remote control?
Was this done in TCL?
No, this was done in ESPN by the look of it.
Okay.
How do we get the screen back?
I'm trying to figure it out.
George? AV Wonk?
Mark, you want the remote?
Yep.
Figure it out.
There's a button at the bottom. So.
Basically, that collapses everything to the smallest range of networks that you give it that will cover everything. The longest prefix match will give you, if you give it a list of networks to match a given IP, it will tell you which one is the closest. And IP collapse will aggregate the list of networks into the smallest set of networks. And IP subtract will basically, you give it a list of networks, the ones with the minuses in front of them, it will try to subtract from the others and clean itself up so you basically can do route aggregation and other things. It's, you know, the building blocks there, you collect the data from SNMP and you can put it in here and you can see, for example, how should I advertise routes, how much space do I have available, how much IP space do I have left. You can look at how it's fragmented versus how you wish it was fragmented. And this is one of the things from TCLib. Now, I'm going to show you how to make one of these things. So the first thing we're going to do is basically make a very hello world program for TCL. And I need to copy over the driver program, which is called SDX, to do the process of building it. Send it. okay, now I have the stupidest TCL program ever, but it will work, and we can use it to generate the file structure that I need. And it's done doing these two commands, which is a qwrap and the unwrap command to SDX. Okay, and you can see there's this new thing called thread.kit, which I'll unwrap into a real file structure that reflects a virtual file structure inside of the kit. Okay, that's basically an unwrapped minimal VFS file system. The main code will call the package that Fred has been wrapped into in a library directory, and that's it, and that gives you your basic structure. And here's how it works. We'll take a look at main package index and file. Kit. It starts the start kit, and then it package requires the app Fred, which was moved over to library, which is the stupid hello world kit. As you can see, it did prepend basically a package provide Fred app, which tells TCL that this is a package, this is its name, and you should load it. There's also a package index TCL, which is how TCL knows to find that, because what it looks for is package index, and package index will tell it what to load. And basically tells it to load Fred. And the interpreter will go through its library structure searching for the package index files. Now to turn it into something useful. To turn this into something useful, we're going to basically make it into what Togo was. To do that, we need to install the library code that it calls, and basically copy over Bobo's equivalent of Fred.tcl, which is, that's it. And we'll have a working thing that does the exact same thing. So let me get started on that. Okay, let me move this over. Basically, it took the TCL glib kit, started it, and when I ran it through the TCL kit interpreter, it loaded TK and it started the installer script to say, this is what we want. Okay. I don't want examples, docs, or applications. If you want to, you can simulate an install and it scrolls out what it's going to do instead of doing it. And I want to change this. Okay, and I think that's what I wanted, unless I typed it wrong. And it's installing. Okay, now let's see if I did it right. Okay, there's TCL. It's installed correctly. It's in the right place. And now let's just get the other file we need and we should be done. Okay, basically there it is, where it's a packet provide at bobo10, packet require IP, and all the rest. Now the only thing I need to change on this file is I need to rename it from bobo to Fred, and I need to change the package provide to app Fred. Then everything should be, I can rewrap it, and we can run it, and we'll get the exact same output we had before. Okay, let's run the old Fred kit before I upgrade it. Updated it, and now we get the output that we got from the other one. Now, DCLib has a lot of interesting things in it handy. You can do, you can send mail, you can do HTML templating, you can do CGIs. The TCL wiki kit runs off this technology. It's, you know, it's a handy way to keep things neat and to deploy software as basically a fat executable without any dependency issues. Let's get back to the talk. Just curious, was this actually interesting so far?
Yeah.
It was good. I've got a few questions.
Oh, dear God.
No, these are simple questions.
Now I'm really worried. Okay.
Press the up arrow if you want. Okay, now wait a second. Looks like I see two things there. Go down. I see two things. I see .tcl kit.
Yes.
I see, well, okay. When you actually ran the thing, weren't there two words on the
line? Well, it depends on what I'm running.
Right.
Here I'm actually running the SDX kit.
Right.
And I'm feeding it those command line options.
Okay.
Now, the TCL kit that I made up, Fred or Bobo, whichever one you prefer.
Right, sure.
Doesn't take any command line options because I was trying to get this done before the meeting.
Right, sure.
I just want to show
you,
that
you
work.
Said you have a single executable, or I misunderstood.
Well,
have you gotten to that stage?
There's one other step you have to do
got it.
Which
okay.
Okay, which is called a start pack.
Okay.
You can use SDX to bind the TCL kit and
sure.
the start kit together to be a fat executable.
And you should get a single executable.
You get a single
so the command line
that you deploy.
Got it.
You're done.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
In fact, if you want, I can see how to do that. Take a look. Set these things so that they will actually dial home and self-update themselves.
Right.
If you make them writable instead of just read-only. Yes, I've seen eyebrows go up as this may not be the best idea, but what can you say? It's a feature.
Well, it's...
And... I could probably figure it out, but I have a feeling...
It's okay, but
I am running long.
Mark, I believe you that there's a command.
No, there is. I've actually done it. It's just
yeah,
I haven't
worked
it like in the last 2 or 3 years.
I just wanted to hear.
But you can put them together, and it does deploy as...
I believe it.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions? Should I get back to the Hell's Edge PowerPoint?
Wrap it up.
Okay.
Let's go for PowerPoint. In a way, I'm glad I was paranoid and actually downloaded the thing before it came from Google Docs.
Right.
Although I'm getting less glad as this thing starts taking forever to load.
Why does it take so long to...
It's Microsoft running on a non-Microsoft OS.
Okay. There's this thing called Beamer they have in LaTeX.
Yes, I know. It's nice, but...
Okay, I just...
Google Docs
haven't used it yet, but I might try to use it for next week.
It's not bad at all. The last talk I did here, I did Beamer.
Okay, basically, as far as resources go, there's the wiki, there's Complank TCL, for those of you who remember what NNTP was, and there's also WWWTCLTK, which is the main language site, and it's owned by ActiveState. Yep. And there's an IRC channel with the details for connecting. It's on Freenode, but they have various gateways set up at that particular wiki page. Ah, good. I left the book slide in. Oh, I forgot that. Okay, books. There are not a lot of TCL books. They tend to be very good. The one is Exploring Spec from 94. It's still the definitive guide. It's still accurate. The TCL and TK toolkit has a lot of... The second edition came out a few years ago. Very good book. A lot of good information as far as using it from C and embedding code in C. Calling from C. And Practical Programming in TCL 4th edition, which is kind of my default book when I'm trying to figure out how the hell do I do this again. Let's see. And I guess that's it. I'm out of slides. Any questions?
What happened to the bad and the ugly?
Yeah.
I don't know. They were they were there when I did them at home. If they had wireless, it would probably work.
Maybe you could summon...
Ah, here's a bad. Wait, here's a bad. I don't know. We got into 20 and 21, where the pain is. The bad was not... It disappeared on me. It's nice when the bad goes away, but here we go again. Thank you for catching that. We can't live in heaven all the time.
Maybe you could just summarize what the bad and the ugly.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Let's see if I can figure out how to get this view one more time. And I will never touch PowerPoint again.
One of the bad things would be that try to get this to go over with your colleagues to do unit testing.
Well, you want to know how you get to go over with your colleagues? You just do it, and then you make them look like fools, and then they have to come along. It's usually the most effective way. Well, he's doing it. It's working. It caught your bugs. Maybe you should do it, too. But then again, I'm antisocial.
Is TCL still slow?
No, actually, it's not. And also, it never was that slow, all things compared to other scripting languages at the same time. And with 8.0, they did a major overhaul. This was back in the day when Sun was putting in money before they standardized on Java. And there is now actually a dual run. Everything is still a string, or has a string representation, but it's bytecode compiled, and it's reasonably fast. You know, as far as now, last time I looked at the number, it's definitely faster than Ruby, although that is damnable faint praise.
Is Ruby slow? I didn't know.
Ruby
that.
Is, I wouldn't go as far as slow, but Ruby is not fast.
I didn't know. And it must be very fast.
The guy went for expressiveness over speed when he designed the language, and he said computers are fast enough that I really don't have to worry about it for what I expect Ruby to be doing, which is like a sysadmin scripting programming language, where you're still fast enough. Then along came Rails, and it's still slow, but... Okay, where the pain is. One of the pain points is still with sockets. They haven't quite got UDP in as a standard part. There are modules you can load that will give you UDP. There are several of them, but they still haven't quite figured out how to get it to fit in with the way TCL works with everything else. There's no parse step because the language is very dynamic, so you don't really know if you have a valid program until you run it and you make all the runtime decisions. Like I was saying before with the start kits, how you can append stuff after you've started the program to make it run. Whereas most things, most scripting languages, it's very hard to like modify where you're loading stuff from or other things. This is very flexible. So it defies static analysis. So you're, again, testing becomes much more important because you don't get things caught by loading. It can be perfectly valid for loading and still be horribly wrong. A lot of things that would be compile errors or load errors in, say, Perl would actually run and blow up here. The event loop, which is a wonderful thing, it allows you to parallelize things without threads. Unfortunately, it can block. So if something is written incorrectly, your entire application can't stop until it clears. Again, as I mentioned before, white space sensitivity is an issue, whereas you have to actually kind of give it room to break things up for words. So you can't put the curly braces next to the L's. You need a space between. And one of the bad things is also one of the good things. Since pretty much everything is a command and you can replace commands, you can move things like proc or the for loop command. You can rename them and replace them with your own or just take them away from the interpreter. You can delete commands. This can cause you a lot of pain. It also gives you a lot of power, and it gives you the ability to lock things down, so it's kind of a double-edged sword. But for me, it's been mostly a pain point because I haven't really had to do it, and every time I've tried, I haven't done it enough to do it right. So, but it's a double-edged sword. You can take away things, say, if you want to have a script where you're accepting executable code from somewhere else, you can turn off large parts of the interpreter that you just don't want it to run. You don't want this script to have file access. You just take away the commands that access the file system. And the script cannot do it. And if it does a file access command, it'll just generate an error. But it's also one of these things that can really make things go wrong, which is why I have it here. And let's see, what else we got? Next slide, please. Okay, basically, resources. Wow, I have 23 slides this time.
Hey, what about the ugly?
What?
What about the ugly?
All right.
Well, usually the bad and the ugly are the same thing after you sober up.
Nice.
Yes?
What is Tickle very, very good at? Python compared to
what said? String processing, incidental programming is one of the things I like about it because it's consistent, it's regular. Python's pretty good there too. It doesn't change much over time. It kind of agrees with me. From my point of view, a lot of this is a matter of taste, and some people like strawberry ice cream. I don't. I like Tickle, other people don't. A lot of people hate it. It is a little different. The other thing was, back when I started using it, things like the event loop were a killer app for me because I was using TNM Scotty to manage 750,000 cable modems. I did not really, with Scotty and the event loop, I didn't really have to know what I was doing for it to magically parallelize itself. So I could pull them and upgrade them and whack them with a stick and do whatever I needed to do via SNMP to get the firmware to upgrade on these things. And nowadays it would be a lot easier because everybody's got an event loop, everybody's got threads. Back then, pretty much you had fork or you had green threads which blocked. So, you know, the event loop was the killer app for me. It just, you know, worked. Other thing I did with Scotty was a lot of network monitoring and also IP ICMP auditing, where it has a Scotty has, as a daemon that runs its root, that has, it has a binary protocol that it talks to, a full ICMP stack, so you could do things like time, netmask, and you could see what was turned on, what was turned off, and you could ask questions of the IP stack. And really, for me, the reason I learned KCL was because Scotty was so much better than NetSNMP in like 2000. It really was. Yes?
So you said two things. You said the event loop can block, and then you just described an application. It sounds to me as if the event loop were right in the center of it, but you couldn't actually deploy.
Well, no,
it
depends on how you do it. And
there's a way to make sure, given a timeout.
Well, the thing is SNMP is UDP based.
Right.
So basically, fire and forget, make a note. If the packet comes back with a response,
right,
before your timeout, you periodically check, and you check all your notes. Either it will time out, and you'll have a note saying that something should have come back by now, or it won't time out because you got a response. But you're not waiting. Things that I'm talking about are things like if you write an event-driven HTTP server,
right,
and it blocks on a database call, and it's not asynchronous, it's a synchronous call.
There's a way to tell the event loop not to do anything incredibly
stupid. Well, for Scotty, yeah, you can, and it also depends on what you're doing. Some stuff without a lot of work is inherently synchronous, like a DB call or something. You have HTTP coming in, you're doing a DB call, it takes 10 seconds, because you don't have multiple processes going, you don't have multiple threads going, you just basically run on coroutines and continue, you know, basically different events. If it blocks, it stops. It doesn't just handle it and go on. For the most part, it works out pretty good, even in web-related things. But it's one of those things where if you get into a bad patch, you don't get degraded. You kind of really just stop. But for SNMP and UDP, it doesn't make a difference. ICMP the same way, because you just throw it out. There's no state or session to maintain. You just throw it out, you get an answer back or not, and you go on and do other things in the middle. And this used to let me basically go out and collect data from hundreds of thousands of devices in a day on a P2-450 without all that much RAM and a crappy hard drive. And that's really where I started really using Pickle to the point where I got to like it. And then the other thing that got me liking it later was I didn't do anything for a long time and stuff still kind of worked the same way, which wasn't always the case with Perl or a lot of the other scripting languages I'd use. You'd end up having to relearn a lot. Ruby, I think, is really bad in that regard because of the Rails culture, where if you haven't touched the code in 6 or 8 months, it's in a ghetto. It's just they've come out with new stuff and there's incompatibilities, and you have to basically, at the very least, re-QA what you've done and fix everything.
That's not Ruby itself.
That's not Ruby. It's Rails, but the thing is, it's very hard to separate the Rails from the Ruby nowadays, because the Rails affects how a lot of the gems that you would use anyway, version and age. So if you need to upgrade, a lot of times you end up doing a lot more work and APIs change, and what you learned 6 months ago just isn't quite accurate anymore, or just doesn't exist anymore. They're doing something completely different. You know, and since I don't do it all the time, I try very hard to avoid those situations because it just means a lot more work, even if I'm doing a cooler tool, you know, and a more resume-friendly tool. Yes?
So I can say a few words about TCL, which will, I think, back you up in a couple of these ways. One is that I started using TCL in 1993.
You got me beat.
And I worked for a company at Los Angeles that basically used it as the command language for an image processing system. And that was actually pretty successful. It turned out to be a good language for a lot of the stuff that we inhabited it. And since that time, I wrote some daemons in it, one of which used multicast for passing information around, and that was pretty effective. The object system was Anchor TCL at that point, which was a compile-in
Yeah, it was a C++
basically. Yeah, it was basically the C++ model, but it was pretty effective at, you know, as an object model.
Yeah.
And basically, the language hasn't changed all that much. It's gotten better, but like you said, there none of the fundamentals has changed.
No,
it's not like what a lot of other languages have gone through. One of the most interesting things that I did with it, though, was I used it as a glue and control language for Java. So there's an extension where you can actually pull a Java VM and control it from TCL.
Jackal?
I don't remember what it was. It might have been. But what was really interesting at the time was that you could essentially instantiate Java objects, communicate with them, make them do things or whatever from a scripting environment, which was completely dynamic. And we ended up using it as the control language for a Java platform. So, and I've also written, I wrote some extensions, modified some extensions, and it was relatively easy, and I think this was even before T. And so it's a pretty flexible environment for embedding. If you can embed it in something else, and you can also use it to, you can also embed other things into it. So it really works well in both directions.
Oh, yeah. One of the other things that has long since been retired at Cablevision, the ISP I was working at, was we had to steer between tent space and public IP because modems got tent space. And what one of the guys did is he wrote a wedge into ISP DHCP.
He what?
He wedged in a tickle interpreter into ISP's DHCP D.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, using tickle, steered our MAC addresses because we knew what the MAC address ranges were for our modems. So we could give out different, you know, not just by where you're coming in from, but also by MAC address without a static lease.
Right.
So we would have, basically, we'd have pool public, pool private, and if your MAC address had basically one of the prefixes of our vendors for cable modems, boom, you got a 10 space IP. Which made life good for us in a lot of ways because we had to bug Aaron a lot less, and Aaron doesn't like to get bugged for IPs, even less so now.
It was TK ended up being sort of imported by almost a lot of other languages when it came out. It was one of the first toolkits that you could use or control from script.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a thing that basically said that not only does Motif suck, but I don't have to use it.
Yeah.
Now, also the other interesting thing about the scripting, other than Perl, which goes from great lengths to embed TK in a native binary, pretty much every other scripting language that calls TK calls it by generating text, feeding it to the TCL interpreter to do the TK. They don't actually embed it. They just generate the text programmatically. They basically write a program on the fly to do the graphics.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very flexible language. Some of the goodies in TCL-lib, which I like, and if you're interested in this stuff, definitely take a look at TCL-lib. There's a good amount of useful things in it. You know, like the IP aggregating thing. The kind of things that would say, you know, be one of those things, I wish I didn't have to write this thing. And they have good stuff. And again, it's much like the TCL books. There aren't a lot of them, but there are enough, and they're good. And TCL has a lot of very good things, including extensions. And unlike the Perl side of it, or a lot of other more popular scripting languages, you don't have eight people writing the same damn module just so they could say they have it. Like, I have this mod, you know, there's like eight of them, and you got to figure out which one's good. And usually none of them.
This is an argument for communism, right?
No.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Just successful capitalism.
I think it's fair to say that TCL at this point is very mature and stable, and that's the thing that gives it this kind of
long,
it's not only longevity, but also when you look at it, you look at the features that it has, and it has a consistency.
Yep. It's like the adults are in charge. It's kind of like FreeBSD with the fact that, you know, and the other BSDs where we don't break stuff gratuitously, like we're not going to change the entire ABI on the networking system because we feel like it today, like certain other OSs which I'll remain nameless. But, you know, they do take breakage seriously. They, in a way, they're almost as good as Oracle is about it, where if you can prove that it behaves differently on a platform, it's a bug and they'll fix it. They want, or at least you can file a bug. Sometimes Oracle, I don't know if they fix, but they take breakage seriously. The only time you can have major breakage is if you have a major version bump. You can have some minor breakage and enhancements on minor version bumps. And on a bug fix release, the only thing that should happen is bugs get fixed. So behavior should be brought into conformance with what it's expected. Yes?
It's interesting to know that is the space issue between like the bracket and the else.
Yeah.
But they're not willing to fix that.
They can't. That's not a matter of they're not willing to. It's how it's tokenized.
Syntax. Oh.
And you need, it tokenizes in a certain way, and that's a word. So it's a word that starts with a curly brace, but...
Yeah.
By it when it's tokenized, that's a word. It's not a, it's a fundamental design thing. This is how the language works. It's not a bug. I wouldn't necessarily call it a feature. It is a gotcha when you get started. But it's also usually one of those things that blows up fast in your face and you fix it quickly. It's like, oops. It's not one of the real problems. It's sort of like, if any of you ever tried doing Lisp for seriously, after, who's giggling? But you will stop seeing the parentheses as this annoying thing. You get an editor, you get the tools to properly do it, and it works. And it kind of gets out of the way. This is the same thing. There are certain things that you will learn to see quickly because they cause you pain immediately. And then you'll just see them and they're not a big deal. Just like any other programming language. There are things that I'm sure are perfectly reasonable to do in Python that you would not want to do in Ruby. There are things that you do in Ruby that you would not want to do in Python. You know, it's just that languages have their own idiosyncrasies, and this isn't really even an idiosyncrasy. This has to do with the way things, just fundamentally how things work. It's not a bug, it's an operator error. So, and after you operate for a while, you learn not to make the errors. Yes, Jay?
No, I was just going to agree. Look, this is, I think, very important for some. Maybe it's because I've gotten old and I'm even stupider than I used to be. But if you can read when you're a beginner and it says tokens are things that are separated by white space that have no white space, if that's it, that makes me happy, right? Because I now know what a token is.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
That may not be the exact thing.
Well,
here, but
exactly.
if it's short, and I can understand it,
yeah.
Then what the hell? I much prefer that to, you know,
what
these other bizarre things. I was looking at C, which I haven't looked
C
at in a few decades. Oh my god! I'm sorry. That's another rant.
My favorite wonderful changes that I've had have happened in Perl. Because apparently Larry Wall never understood the idea that if you're going to just bump the bug, you know, the bug fix number, the last little digit, you're not supposed to do things like fundamentally change the greediness of the regular expression in there.
Right.
Or all sorts of other horrible things.
Yeah.
He just sort of threw in there because, well, he's Larry Wall and he can do it. And he thought it was cute. So, that's really it. Now, if you look at, just to finish my last slide, if you look at the TCLib, they have some basically sections. They have programming tools, a section on math, where you can do various types of mathematics, data structures, text processing, networking, CGI, web stuff. Now, I was going to pull up the main page on wireless, but that's not happening today, apparently. Because we don't have wireless.
We do.
No, we don't. He said they took it down for today.
I lied now.
All right. But I'm going to just go through this. If there's interest, I'll pull it up. Let me know. Or if you'd rather go to the bar and start drinking.
I'm satisfied.
You'd rather go to the bar, okay.
No, I don't want to go to the bar, amazingly enough.
But
I'm satisfied. I mean, that was a talk.
Yeah. But to let Now, basically, some of the specific things in TCL Lib that I've used that I like is the LDAP, LDAPX, SMTP in MIME for sending mail. There's a report package, a CVS package, and a data structure for a matrix that you can feed into the report package that I've used to build basically a SNMP, not an SNMP, but an SSL cert checker where it checks the expiration date, the host name to make sure it matches DNS and some other things, and sends out a nice text formatted email. TCP/IP, the TCLlib IP was a thing I did before where it did that. That's new in this version. The version of TCL it will run on is up through 8.2. So even the new stuff, they try to make as backward compatible as possible. Text utils has various text munging. You can do better. It has an improved splitting command. It has various other text manipulation, formatting things, paragraph formatting things in it. Command line is basically the command line processing. And they've just added another new module called PKI, which allows you to, like, in TCL, dissect certs and ask it questions like expiration, key size, things like that. So if you're doing, say, an SSL audit, and you want to find out all the certs that have 1K keys or all the certs that are signed by 1K keys, you can use this to take the cert apart after you grab it off of the website. And this is a very handy thing if you have lots of certs to manage, if you're trying to do stuff, because one of the things I did for about a year and a half was manage about 100 certs. And tools like this make your life very easy. The Monday morning report makes it really easy to get the certs renewed. It lets you show the polling, show the progress. And by automating this stuff, you don't have to do it by hand. Either way, it's your fault. At least this way, you get someone else to do it. You know, you have the reports, you can give people more, and you have something to bother people with, which helps. You know, instead of just calling people up and saying, you know, your cert's expired. And then we get to the favorite slide. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, now we go. Yay!
Yay!
How long did I run, anyway?
It was exactly right.